From the Lynn to Grand Theater University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 18th day of February, 2025. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Naomi Bloom. She's at TotalFarmMarketing.com out of West Bend, Wisconsin. And then we'll be joined by FAPRI's Ben Brown. He's at the University of Missouri in Columbia and with Extension and the Food and Agricultural Policy Research Institute there. And as we wrap up our time together, we'll take a look at the weather forecast, too, with Don Day at Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming, on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media, just 2 weeks away from the all-day ag outlook at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. If you've not registered yet, today is the day. Do it now at willag.org. See the agenda, register yourself. The cost is just $40. And don't forget to pick up one of those books by Neil Dahlstrom, Scott Irwin, or Jonathan Kappas. March corn today at 5.02 up 5 and 3 quarters. December 4 and a half higher at 4.77 and a half. The March beans at 10.38 and a half up 2 and a half. November at 10.58 up 6 cents for the day. Naomi Bloom now joins us from TotalFarmMarketing.com. Hi, Naomi. Thanks for being with us today.
Yeah, pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
Let's begin with the export inspections. The markets were closed yesterday because of the President's holiday, so the inspections were released this morning. Can you give me your assessment of them on the weekly and the yearly basis, please?
Yeah, so for the week, we had export inspections at 1.611. So that was for thousands of tons. That was ahead of the expected range. That was just above expectations totally, and just says that other countries are just really, really wanting our product, and we're shipping it out as quick as we can. Our year-to-date, year-over-year inspections are up about 35% over a year ago, so things are just strong there, and the corn market responded to that today. And that, I think, was part of the reason that the corn for the March contract was able to get above that $5 handle. And we saw some new buying come in today. On the soybean side of it, export inspections coming in at 720, below the expected range. And so that might have been part of the reason why beans today just lagging a little bit. And also behind expectations was the wheat number at 250. That was below the expected range of 300 to 500. So that corn number, though, just definitely spoke volumes for today's price activity.
And it's a corn number that we thought had been front-loaded, but apparently just continuing to buy by the world.
Yeah, we are seeing that. We're seeing that in terms of sales. We're seeing it in terms of the inspections and what's leaving the country. So that corn demand is strong, and it does kind of make you wonder if now on the March WASDE report in about 3 weeks, will we see the demand number for exports for corn on that report be a bigger demand number? And then potentially could that bring the ending stocks number down? So that's something that the trade is going to probably start to talk about and toy with. But before that, of course, we have to get into the USDA Outlook Forum at the end of next week.
Yeah, that's the last 2 days of next week. What are your expectations, I suppose?
Well, I think that they'll give us a higher corn acre number. Trade is expecting that. You know, what they throw out there next week will just be, you know, interesting, as it's not an official USDA report number, and trade is already expecting them to show bigger acres, and they always give us a record yield number. So it'll just be a question of, does trade the number or just kind of ignore it and focus on the reality of still tight ending stocks for the old crop, which continues to keep the March, May, and July contracts supported overall.
For corn, is there much of a difference in direction for you as it's related to old and new crop?
Well, the old crop numbers, we still have a chart that is inching higher, and now that December chart has been, you know, working higher as well. So I feel like both of those markets, you know, I had been hoping we'd see a little bit of a pullback or a correction on corn over the past couple weeks, and we only saw sideways range trade and maybe like a 10-cent pullback at best. And now it's like we built up enough momentum from the past 2.5 weeks from that kind of sideways shuffle that we were doing to give us enough of firm footing to be able to have this leap higher today. So it is important to just be mindful that the funds are, you know, overall, they have that long position in corn. Are they going to be defending it or not? as we go forward, and we have to keep an eye on geopolitical issues. And of course, if there's anything that should occur with poor weather on that second crop corn in Brazil, the market's going to be ready to respond to it. But it does, again, start to feel like we're trading, you know, slightly smaller corn carryout. And it feels like almost like, well, if we can't see that market finally have some sort of a pullback on corn, might as well jump in and be a buyer and join them. And that technical momentum still continues to just slowly gain with prices continuing to inch higher for the corn market.
Do you think in the new crop that because you were looking for a pullback, just a pause in the marketplace, do you think that's not going to happen at this point and it will march higher to whatever the next area might be? I suppose that's up at, I don't know, 480 and a 5 or something along those lines, or at least the way I'm measuring it out. Do you see the market continuing on this steep rally?
Well, I would say it's going to be just a slow climb higher. So with that DEIS contract, this is the first time we've been able to close above 475. It was a major resistance area. Do we keep that momentum going just straight higher? Probably not. We maybe take a little bit of a pullback here, but now we're talking about a pullback of maybe only being a nickel or 10 cents instead of looking for, hoping for maybe like a 15 or 20 cent pullback. It's going to take either some kind of a geopolitical thing at this point to get this corn market to pull back, or you got to give the funds a reason to just want to exit that long position. And now I'm wondering, well, it's end of February. Are we going to see the funds hang in there with that long contract until we get into our summer high? So that's kind of what I'm starting to wonder. If the market, you know, maybe doesn't go straight up from here, get a little bit more of a sideways shuffle again, but ultimately continuing to trend higher, just on the fact that U.S. carryout numbers are tight, global carryout is tight, and corn, from a historical perspective, is still pretty decent buy here.
It seems like a hard pull with two corn crops, the Brazilian and the U.S., not being put in the ground yet, but all to be put in the ground within the next 4 months.
Yeah, and so we know that Brazilian crop, you know, has some potential, but at the same time, it's already spoken for in terms of demand. They need that for part of their domestic demand yet, and then all of that is expected to be exported also to the world. So the world is expecting and needs that big Brazilian crop. So there actually now is no room for error. The question then becomes, how many acres planted in the United States? Does that then alleviate the tight global carryout and the tight U.S. carryout? So it's starting to actually make me think of how the market was trading in 2021 when we came off of the big China buying. We had 2 billion bushel carryout in August of 2020, and then by the time we got to January of 2021, we were down to 1.5 billion bushel carryout, similar to what we have going on now. And then that year, that late March, we had a surprise, really, really bullish quarterly stocks report from the USDA in March 2021, and that really lifted the market higher. And then from the end of March into mid-May, July corn futures rallied almost $2 just in that short time frame because the ending stocks number kept getting tighter and tighter. And then, of course, it lifted the December contract as well. It didn't, of course, rally as much as what the July did, but it started to work higher as well. So it's just something to be mindful of, because going back again, that January USDA report is such a game changer, and now it feels like we're peeling off more layers of the onion of this whole corn story, and could there just be more supportive prices to come? Because, again, we've got U.S. carryout at 1.5 billion bushels now. That's such a difference than where we were back in the summertime. And we have the potential for it to maybe get tighter because we had strong corn export numbers. We're in the ethanol numbers, too, continue to be strong as well.
Thank you much, Naomi.
Thanks for having me.
That's Naomi Bloom. She is with TotalFarmMarketing.com. We're now joined by Ben Brown, agricultural economist with FAPRI, the Food and Agricultural Policy Research Institute at the University of Missouri. He's also with Extension there. Thank you, Ben, for being with us. Oh, and thanks for coming to the state last week for the Illinois Soybean Summit. It was good to see you.
Yeah, I had a wonderful time. Met a lot of great Illinois producers and had a lot of really great feedback, and certainly a lot of conversations in the back of the room after I got done about just kind of the state of the agriculture economy and where we might be heading. A lot of people had questions, and it was a really good time, good event.
Let's start with that, but we'll start a little broader in a macro sense. Where are we in the economy now, and what does that tell you about the state of the ag economy?
Sure. So when I present, a lot of times I have three kind of categories that I start and just give broad remarks about. It's always commodity markets and just kind of what, you know, is affecting all the commodities across the board. Then usually we talk a little about the U.S. economy and just kind of the overall sentiment and state of the ag economy or of the macro economy. And then we finish up and talk a little bit about what's happening in the policy realm. Those are kind of the three things that I usually try to hit on. And I would say here as of late, there's been a lot of not only questions about commodity markets as people start thinking about, you know, moving their final old crop supplies, maybe even thinking about new crop pricing. You know, certainly a lot of questions around policy, but I've been getting more and more questions about the macro economy and just kind of where we see things going as it relates to consumer expenditures, as it relates to the employment market, and then frankly, interest rates. You know, that's one of the things that really can impact agriculture producers a lot is how much they're paying for operating notes at the beginning of the year that they repay back at the end of the year. So a lot of questions about where interest rates could go in the months ahead.
What do you think?
So I've been of the opinion that interest rates are maybe a little bit lower right now than where we probably need to see them to have a neutral position. That's my opinion. Others, you know, other economists might disagree, and certainly, you know, there's people all over the spectrum. But my opinion is that, you know, last year in 2024, we saw a 1 percentage point decrease in the federal funds rate. That's that short term federal funds rate set by the Federal Reserve. We saw a full percent, and half maybe was justified. I felt like the other half was just the market moving because that's what the Fed did because that's what the market was expecting them to do. Given the inflation data that we've seen both at the consumer level and at the wholesale level in the last couple of months, I have a really hard time seeing how the Fed can just maintain interest rates where they're at. And certainly, you know, I wouldn't remove the possibility of an interest rate hike here before May or June.
Well, the Federal Reserve has been trying to keep things in line. So they brought the interest rates up in order to slow things down. And that's what your expectation is again this time around.
Yeah. So something that I feel has changed in the Federal Reserve, let's just say over the last 10 years, I can probably go back and kind of pinpoint where this started. But the Federal Reserve has really, really, really tried to communicate policy decisions in their press releases or their news conferences and in their language, right? So you're hearing more and more about kind of the future direction of federal policy, kind of in the news rather than through their official policy statements. It used to be they would go into a room, they would hash it out, and they would release a policy statement afterwards, and that was what the market had to trade on. And I think the change that we've seen is them being a little bit more proactive and kind of priming the market a little bit for some of these decisions, and so that cuts both ways. And certainly when we were seeing interest rates hikes 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago, they would communicate ahead of time. You know, the expectation was, hey, we're going to keep increasing interest rates to fight this inflation. Then they kind of started to soften that language here over the last 6 months, and interest rates kind of fell down. I think now what they're trying to do is they're trying to proactively say, hey, inflation is moving in the wrong direction. It might justify interest rate hikes. And so they're priming the market saying, hey, don't be surprised if we do have to increase interest rates. Now, that works to the point of, like, if they do enough priming, you know, maybe the market gets enough concerned that they don't have to increase rates. And of course, then you end up in this boy that cried wolf situation. But I certainly think they're using language and press releases and press conferences much more today than what they did 10 years ago.
Yeah, I could say the same for USDA, NASS, and the World Ag Agricultural Outlook Board, and because I follow all of them, the same goes for the Federal Reserve. I agree with you that it's been probably a bit longer than a decade at this point, but in the 90s, certainly you did not hear anything from them
at all. You know, I certainly think they're trying to communicate, trying to control, you know, market sentiment basically with language rather than official policy discussions. But, you know, just to look at last week's inflation data, you know, the consumer price index came up, you know, month over month higher than even what the expectations were. That's the third straight month that we've seen inflation come in hotter than expected. And the producer price index was also up, signaling that that wholesale inflation will eventually trickle down to consumer inflation as well. So I do think we're seeing the prices increase faster than expected. And I think that's got the Federal Reserve a little bit concerned.
Now, turn your attention to the marketplace directly. It feels if we are at a tipping point for the marketplace, but it's unclear as to which direction that might be. This is the first time for some time that many of the brokers have begun to feel more positive about the marketplace. I think farmers actually also feel more positive about the marketplace, but the rally has happened to some extent. The question is, which direction now?
Yeah, this is a great conversation to have because we're kind of right here at what I call the change in the market sentiment season. So, you know, there's a period to where we're very focused in exports of U.S. product and then also really production in South America. And those two are connected because if you have more production in South America, less demand for our exports here out of the United States. But then that changes and we start focusing on U.S. production in the summer, starting with planted acreage. And usually that starts right around the time, a little bit, maybe right before USDA's Outlook Forum in D.C. That's an area that has changed over time. We used to not get the new crop acreage estimates until the Outlook Forum. Now they publish those a couple of months in advance. So some of that built up excitement has kind of waned here in recent years. But it's still an important data point, and it does capture market attention. So I do think we are kind of on this tipping point, and that's where I think we, you know, maybe it's creating a little bit of uncertainty, is because if you look at South America production, and I'm going to start in corn here. If you look at South American production and the opportunity for increased corn export sales out of the United States, that is bullish to the market. Then you turn around and you say, okay, well, let's think about new crop corn acreage seedings and how large they potentially could be, and a trend line adjusted yield, which we haven't hit trend line for the last couple of years. So there's a lot of people questioning whether trend line forecast for yield is an accurate method anymore. But nonetheless, you look at potential acreage on the corn side and a trend line yield, which is what the market will trade, and that's bearish. And so you could end up in a scenario where you have a bullish old crop picture and a bearish new crop picture right here at the same time. Soybeans, kind of similar story, just in reverse. Bearish old crop picture, given the large supplies that we see in South America, and a potentially bullish new crop picture for U.S. ag producers. So we're at this period where we're trading two different markets, or we're talking and thinking about two different markets, marketing years, and we've got opposite fundamentals kind of working for both of those markets. So just an interesting year, and I think that's probably what you're picking up there with, like, this tipping point of, like, when does this market sentiment start to shift and people are saying, okay, we can get through the old crop because we've got these fundamental changes in the new crop market that we can wait for.
Yeah, so these are things that producers who have old crop to sell, and it's very and certainly have new crop that they must market eventually. It's very difficult to deal with them as separate entities.
Sure, absolutely. Yep. We broadly think of the corn market and the soybean market, but we're at that point where we're going to start talking about two different crops, two different crop years, two different sets of fundamentals.
Any advice?
So, you know, I'm going to complicate this one more hurdle. You know, so not only we've been talking about two different crop years and largely talking about the market sentiment from a futures perspective, the same concept applies for your local cash markets and basis. I do think there are some opportunities in the local markets with basis contracts here of late that are adding to some of the stronger fundamentals on the old crop corn futures to where, you know, there's probably some opportunity to move that old crop corn, maybe even at profitable levels at this point. So, you know, those are things to be thinking about in the old crop market. For the new crop market, you know, what I'm hearing is that the basis market's not overly friendly, or at least what I'm looking at, the basis market's not overly friendly for new crop. But we may be seeing, you know, if we're right and the new crop looks a little bearish, there may be some opportunity to lock in some futures prices here and let basis kind of fluctuate to see what happens in the cropping season. So, you know, these are just things that we, you know, break down price and we manage them as best as we can given the separate fundamentals we've got. But you know, lots of information. You know, you could just in corn and soybeans, you could make the case that there's four different price markets to follow here right now. So
indeed. Thank you much. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, Todd.
That's Ben Brown from University of Missouri with the Food and Agricultural Policy Research Institute, an extension based in Columbia on campus. You're listening to the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world, where right now you should sign up today for the All-Day Ag Outlook. That's not next week, but the following Tuesday. We'd like to have you there at the Beef House. The cost is just $40. All the details are online, WILLAG.org. Don't wait. Register right now. The theme music for the Closing Market Report is written, performed, produced, and courtesy of Logan County, Illinois farmer Tim Gleason. Now let's turn our attention to the weather forecast. Don Day is here from Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Hey, Don, thanks much for being with us. What's the story in the weather as it relates to the United States?
Well, the story this week weather-wise across the lower 48 is all the winter weather, the severe cold that has spread from the Rockies and the Northern Plains now into the Midwest and Corn Belt, and very cold temperatures, even for February, getting deep into the heart of Texas and into the Southern Plains. This cold and the snow associated with it and the ice will dominate the weather pattern across most of the central U.S., moving to the Great Lakes and eastern United States here later this week. However, it does look like by the weekend, we're going to see the Pacific push in some warmer air, and moderating temperatures will move into the U.S., all of the lower 48 states, as we get into the weekend and into early next week. This will bring relief to the Dakotas, Minnesota, Wisconsin, southern Canada, Montana, parts of Wyoming, Nebraska, and Kansas that have had severe cold. This will be a break for livestock interests in those areas. We do expect, though, the warmer temperatures to overspread the lower 48 next week for a bit of a thaw for the last days of February. Once we get into March, the weather pattern starts to get stormy again, although should not be as cold. Going south of the equator, the trend, which has been drier for the last several weeks in the key growing areas of Brazil and Argentina, continue. Now, the prospects for rain look a little bit better over the next 14 days for parts of Brazil, and especially looking a little bit better for Argentina. But overall, the trend is going to be warmer and drier than average for the next 10 to 14 days in most of Argentina and Brazil.
Hey, thank you, Don. That's Don Day. He's with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Joined us on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. Came to you from Illinois Public Media. Don't forget to go online right now and register for our All-Day Ag Outlook. That's Tuesday, March the 4th at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. I'm Todd Gleason.